the great Dexter Gordon with his even greater composition, Tanya. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're going to continue our, how should I say, our unique program style from yesterday, because so many people wanted to get in. At first, people were reluctant, but it was a program approach, programmatic approach that has always been popular. So I was glad to revitalize it and much encouraged to see the reaction. The idea is that listeners, this is kind of like a pop quiz. Listeners are given a news topic and they are to give us the significance as they see it, the significance of the story or the issue or the news event, and we see how it goes. It's a form of media literacy. It is media literacy because it is gauging how you relate to media and how media relates to you, and to what degree do you exercise independent thought as we consume information? What other questions are emerging in our minds, which is really the whole point. There's no right, there's no wrong. Not in the absolute sense, but we're looking for evidence that you're thinking. You're not just ingesting information whole. You're thinking about the information available to you and making sense of it in light of your own experience and what your own intelligence and what your own common sense tells you. All right, so that's basically the point of it. So we will continue with that today, and we start off with one of the topics we touched on yesterday, and it is called the March of the Migrants. As we speak, more than 4,000 people are now part of this march, leaving Central and South American countries, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, dominating them, walking toward or marching toward the US border, the US-Mexico border in particular. And of course, they are hoping to draw attention, not just world attention, but also US attention in Congress, about what they believe to be unfair immigrant policies, immigration policies, and they want them to stop. As you know, we still have this unsolved, unfinished piece of business of the US basically snatching kids from their parents, breaking up families. Some children still are being held in prison-like or internment-type camp conditions in the United States. But there seems to be no governing authority overseeing what the United States is doing to these immigrants and their children and their families. And it seems that for a while it was a hot topic, everybody was talking about it, but it went cold. The United States has successfully faced down US media, telling them, there are more important things to talk about. And for the media themselves, because the whole thing is covering issues that have great sex appeal, this does not. So the focus, kind of moved away from the very serious nature of this question. Now, it has reached a point where the president is threatening not only to cut off aid to these countries at to the tune of several millions of dollars each, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. But now he's saying he is considering, or plans are being made to intercede, intervene in this march of the migrants, trying to stop it before even reaching the border. And that would involve possibly military intervention and some form of force against the marchers heading north. So it is taking a serious turn. This is no longer about people protesting their what they consider to be their civil and human rights. But now we have the United States taking formally a position that it is within its rights to, it's a kind of stand your ground law, even though it's not, the ground is in somebody else's country. But Trump has indicated that he is willing to take military action to intercede in this march, to stop the marches before they even reach the border, and to take other action that will force the countries that are among the predominant countries from which the migrants are coming, and that is again Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, not only to rip away from them the money promised to them in terms of aid, but also now to directly take military action. Of course, this raises some serious questions, which you are going to share with us. What are the implications of the president's announced intentions? That's the question that I want you to deal with as our first question. We have several on the board to talk about today. 888-874-4888. Let's have you start off, and it's a very in terms of where we're going, it's not a difficult issue to address. I don't think it's a difficult issue to address. You should have a mountain of questions that you should be able to raise about the situation as it stands. So let's get to it at 888-874-4888. What do you make of the president's announced intentions to cut off aid to now militarily prevent, if he has to use military force to prevent the marchers from even reaching the border while they are in another country? What should we be prepared for, and what do you think, what major questions do you think that the president's announced actions will precipitate? 888-874-4888. Let's get the clock started because I don't want to keep waiting as we did yesterday until you think you have the courage to start. Just call in and let's keep moving. It's a very important question, and you should have at the ready several reactions to what the president is saying on a domestic level and on an international level, and certainly on the matter of law. 888-874-4888. We should have at least two calls coming in to address this question. I will also tell you that right after that, we will be talking about, oh, here we go. Well, I'll interrupt myself and take this question. No calls yet. Okay. We will be talking about something very significant that happened yesterday and that should really be the subject of a great deal of discussion. And that is the departure from the Trump administration of his White House counsel, Donald McGahn. Now, there's something very, very important about this departure, frankly. It shouldn't be a surprise that people at some point or the other want to get the heck out of that White House and away from Donald Trump. But we should be tackling it in a very different way, too, because there are some very important questions associated with McGahn's departure. Ali from New York, you're talking about the March of the Migrants. What is your opinion?
Yes. How you doing, you trees?
Good. How about you?
Well, hanging in there to what's happening all around the
We
world and in
all
the
are
city.
hanging in, aren't we?
Yes, and I would like for just to make one announcement real quick. On Monday, October 22nd, is the 23rd National Day of Protest Against Police Brutality. At 2 p.m., we're going to assemble at Foley Square for the rally and the march, and we're going to go to Police Plaza, also to the African Burial, and there's going to be some speakers. So for the people in New York and people who are going to be visit, please come join us at 2 p.m. at Foley Square, and that is October 22nd, Monday, this Monday, and is a 23rd National Day of Protest Against Police Brutality. And some of the parents that the police have killed their loved ones, they will be there to support us and to speak out. Thank you. But I would like to go back to your question. You see this thing, and I had to bring this up because we always talk about Russia and the intervention and about this all this this politics about that the Russian came and meddled into our election. What people have to understand, and this is something that I always bring out, is that the United States went especially to the country of Honduras and did a They support a coup, and who did? Miss Clinton and Mr. Obama. And why are these people are coming into this nation? Why? Because the intervention that the United States had used in that country, supporting an illegitimate government in the country of Honduras. And what happened is one of the most dangerous countries for journalists and people that they go out on the street. So this is something that I always bring out because it's important to people know, to know. And one other thing that people should know is that the problem is with the other country that United States is blackmailing right now. If you let these people through, we're not going to give you any financial aid. So they're using blackmail to make sure that those people, they stopped before they even enter center country to pass and come here. Why do everyone wanting to come here? Because they see what is happening all around them with the killing, and they think that this is the safer and the country that they will be able to bring their family and get a job and get out of that situation. So it is the United States government who has created this problem. As long as they got into those countries, especially now they wanted to not only intervene in Venezuela, but they want to use military action to intervene in Venezuela. So where do you think these people are going to be living, Venezuela? Pretty soon. And this is what is going on in Latin America. And all of them, they should empty those countries and show themselves on the border and see what the military will do when the people get on the border.
What do you say, Ali, to the position that the administration is taking, and many people who support the administration, that there has to be some kind of an end to the flow of people into the United States, irrespective of the reasons that they're coming. There has to be a limit, and this is as good a time as any to reinforce that point of view.
Well, I will have to say about that as longer this country gets involved in the affair of the United States with the Monroe Doctrine, it's like those land, even though they have different names, is part of the United States. As long as they intervene in their government, look what is happening in Brazil right now, these people, they're gonna come here. And what they just face it, this government is a fascist government. This government, they're doing the same thing that they're doing in Europe. These Europeans, they have gone into Africa. They want the mineral. They have disturbed those countries and the people they have to leave because they have to survive, especially the people in Libya, people in Syria, and all those other countries. So this is what is happening. As long as this government intervene, of course they wanted to stop the flow of immigrants. That is why, because another thing is, remember, by the year 2000, I think is 40-something, this country is going to be a country of color. And they're doing everything in their power to maintain a white group in here to control everyone. Okay? And this is what they're doing, is to control, so because they don't want to see brown and black people. And they know that their time is coming. That is why you see putting Kavanaugh and people in those positions for life, because they have to control this country and they wanted to maintain the white people in here to control everybody else. And they know it's coming. They know it's coming. And that's what they're doing. They have to control it on the border.
Thank you very much, Ali. A very incredible piece of instruction. Thank you so much for calling in today. We move on to our next question, which has to do, well, it's not so much a question, but an observation, which you, I expect, will interpret the significance of for us. Donald McGahn was the White House counsel. He hasn't stayed long. He just got there, and next thing you know, he's out. Now, this may be chalked up by some as being an example of the revolving door policy with the Trump administration. It doesn't seem that people either stay long or last long enough to give some kind of cogency to the administration. People are coming and going all the time. What is significant, though, about Donald McGahn is that for the short time that he had been there, very short time, less than 2 years, actually, he was successful in getting 29 appeals court judges appointed, 52 district court judges appointed. He got Neil Gorsuch, now a U.S. Supreme Court, appointed, and he got Brett Kavanaugh, our recent appointee to the U.S. Supreme Court. That is an astounding record of achievement. And I don't mean achievement in the sense that it's a good thing. I just mean the sheer volume of work done and the consequent results. That is incredible. But how should we interpret this? What is the obvious question that should be raised here? Let me remind you. 29 appeals court judges, 52 district court judges, and most recently, 2 U.S. Supreme Court justices. What's the obvious question that we should be raising? 888-874-4888. I want to see who is going to be the first to get it. These are all federal positions, and they wield a lot of power because significant cases are decided in these courts. Not that, you know, lower courts don't have any significant cases that they consider, but I'm talking in terms of how the society runs, which courts handle what cases, what is particularly significant about McGahn's achievement, if you want to call it that. It is an achievement. This is not an easy thing to do. And it got done. I think there are at least two extremely important questions that should be raised here. Do you have at least one of them? 888-874-4888. Come on, don't leave me alone. Don't leave me here hanging out by myself. You surely must know what the questions to be raised are. You can't tell me you can't think of a question relating to this as a record. You see, this is how we get an understanding of how the system works. Now, in everything that he had done, the stories that we've been told, the stories that are headlined, you know, for us to read, have to do with his departure. Okay? He's quitting. He's gone. He's leaving Donald Trump's administration. Great. Okay. You got that. Give me 2 significant questions that should be raised with respect to his leaving the administration. I almost feel like I need background music here to keep us going. What is going on? Are you that timid? Are you so self-conscious? Are you so afraid of putting your thoughts out there? I didn't think that that would be you. I would think that you would jump at the chance of giving us the lowdown. You're reading the stories, you're hearing the stories, and you surely have something to share about it that we need to know. Bruce from New York, you're a brave soul, Bruce. Welcome.
Okay, thank you very much. Eugene, on the question that you recently asked about McGahn, you know, I think his record is an indication. The question we should ask is how useless is the Democrats, you know? And that question is predicated on the notion about what happened to Obama's Supreme Court thing and what's happening. I mean, you know, look, my fundamental conclusion is that the Democrats work in collusion with Republicans to achieve white supremacist ideals, right? But they play as though they are our side, they're black. I mean, these people cannot even stop black people from getting shot in the streets, right? Okay? Or stop the Republicans from interfering with black people who are looking to just vote, right? So I have come to the conclusion that we are witnessing a massive conspiracy, and I use that word not advisedly, right? That the Democrats are in collusion with the Republicans to achieve the same ends.
Yeah, but that's a theory.
I have something to say about this. Huh?
That's a theory, though. I'm asking you for concrete evidence.
Yeah.
That should cause us to rethink this development here. I think you're on a very good track, but it is hard to consider your point of view at this moment as evidence. I think it's a good theory.
But Utrecht, we have the evidence every day. I mean, the whole existence of the Democrats for decades provide evidence to support my conclusion. The evidence is there. I mean, look, even when we had Clinton, for instance, right? I mean, you never see any Democrats in the last 40 or 50 years put up any so severe radical left-wingers on the judge. They never even attempt to do stuff, right? But the Republicans can get these most rabid, rancid right-wingers approved, you know, with the help of Democrats. So is that not evidentiary enough?
All right, I will accept that. I will accept that now that you have put it that way. I will accept that. And I think you're onto something there. But you also started out on a strong foot and then you faded on it. So could you talk a bit again about what this should instruct us about?
Okay, it should instruct us that there is no salvation in pretending that the Democrats are going to be our saviors, you know, that the elections that are coming up this year and whatever else, that we can look to the Democrats to change anything that Trump has brought to the fore.
Okay. I accept your analysis, and thank you.
Could I make a comment about the previous issue about people at the border and that type of thing? Is that still open?
No, we did that yesterday.
We're going on. Yeah, okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ever forward, never backward. Thank you.
All right, okay.
Marty from Connecticut, what does this tell us? What questions does this raise?
If you're referring to the issue regarding the White House lawyer resigning, is that
yes.
the correct issue?
Yes.
I would say my concern would be a person who's appointed that many or gotten or facilitated or effectuated that many judges being placed should not be practicing law when they leave. For the reason, I would think that they would have to recuse or excuse themselves from a number of cases because they would be coming before people who they have had influence in their being placed in a position.
But get closer to the development itself. What questions does McGahn's quitting the Trump administration, what questions should it raise in our minds?
I don't know how he was brought to that position. I don't know whether it was simply selection by Donald Trump or whether he held some public office. I assume it's not a public office, anything that you voted on. So I feel uncomfortable with him being a lawyer that could come before the people that he's placed.
Okay. You've made that clear. Could you think of any question, any issue other than that, what you've already raised, and I happen to agree, but in the overarching sense?
You mean in terms of criteria? Well, I mean, what was the selection criteria for him at placing these people or getting them appointed? I mean, we spent a lot of time with Kavanaugh, but at the end of the day, I know nothing about any of the people that he's appointed or what his ideology or criteria was.
Okay. Well, Marty, you added to the intrigue. Thank you very much.
Have a great day, from Maryland. And
thank you. Paul from Maryland, what should we be thinking about here? Oh, Paul is gone. He hung up. Okay. Lisa from New York.
How are you today?
Fine, thank you, Lisa. How about you?
I'm fine. I don't know as much about this as I could, but I did want to help out. My first thought about what we should be thinking about is that he was perhaps working in the administration for a reason. Now he's completed what he had planned to accomplish, and
yes,
perhaps that's why he's leaving. But the other point that one of the other gentlemen had made, talking about the Democrats, I did just hear maybe yesterday's news or the day prior to that on Democracy Now! That many Democrats helped these appointments, you know, these judge, I guess, you know, judgeships, they helped these appointments to go through, and that they could have helped to fight against this. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with McGahn or not. So I just thought I'd bring it up since I had heard that.
I'm glad you brought it up, because it is in the very close vicinity of where you ought to be going today with this question. Thanks, Lisa, for your call.
Okay.
Dwight.
All right. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Dwight from New York. What questions should immediately come to mind?
Good afternoon to the PRN family and audience. Well, Therese, the question...
You need to turn your radio down or off, because we're getting a lot of feedback.
Okay, I don't have the radio up. I don't know why. Is that any better, though?
Yeah, a little bit better.
Okay, well, Therese, I would have to ask the question, did Trump get all these judges appointed by himself? And I come to the conclusion, no. Because when you have the Koch brothers writing legislation, and you have lobbyists writing legislation and suggesting legislation, I just think that Trump is the front man. And it doesn't make any difference whether you say that if Trump leaves today or tomorrow, he has implemented things that are already in play. So, see, the first question that I would ask and I would be suspicious about is how much did the Koch brothers and their network of influence play in Trump's decision making? I don't think that Trump is that smart that he has laid all these appointees out and then were so successful in getting them done. So I know that there's been some type of invisible hand. Now, there was a question raised earlier about the Democrats' part in all this. When I called last week, I referred to Michael Moore asking Steve Bannon, how exactly did they accomplish all the things that the Republicans have gotten accomplished during Trump's tenure? And Steve Bannon simply said that his side, the Republicans, go for the headshot, and the Democrats pillow fight. Now, I remember back in 2010. Well, first of all, I'm going to cross this statement and the fact that the Democrat, I totally believe that one of the callers said earlier that the Democrats and the Republicans have the same agenda. The Democrats, I mean, how ludicrous is it being a black person? Just a thinking black person. No white person would even say, when asked, what do you always carry in your pocketbook or purse, a bottle of hot sauce. Now, come on, how much catering to the black community is that? And see, I just cannot believe that. If you remember when, I think it was 2010, when the government was shut down, the Republicans did not even at that time ask anything about cutting entitlement programs. Obama himself put that on the table. Now, the Republicans will tell you that, hey, this is what we're built upon.
I want you to be right on point. You're making good points, but they kind of related at this point. I want you to get straight to the heart of the matter. What should...
Say to the heart of the matter, you three, is that you have two different parties in name only that are working for the same exact end. You have the Republicans. They are. When is the last time that the Republicans were successful in anything? I mean, anything that the Republicans want to do right now, they aren't. They don't have it. They have a powder puff opponent. They don't have anybody that's fighting. I mean, I don't see how anybody could say right now that they're a Democrat and feel good about it, because the Democrats don't have any fight in them about any issue. Cory Booker comes out. I'm from New Jersey. I don't feel Cory Booker. He was a show horse there. You know, made a lot of noise. And see, a lot of times people don't need substance. They just need a lot of noise. They forget that this is the same guy who voted down generic drugs. You know, so he's a corporatist himself. So the both parties are corporately driven. They have different names, but their agenda and the way they do things are slightly different, but the end goal is the exact same.
Do you see Bruce, who called in earlier, dancing at what you just said? He is happy.
Yes.
You agree with him. Thank you so much for your call. John from New Jersey. What questions should immediately come to mind? It's a straightforward question.
Okay. Since they've done away with due process, my question would be a three-part multiple choice. We got the chair, we got the gallows, and we got the firing squad. Which one do you want? That's what my question would be. I have nothing else to say, since we all know that this whole place is crooked as a shillelagh. I don't know. In either case, that's my answer to that question. You have a good day.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for contributing. Jason from Connecticut, you're the last person on this question. What is your view?
Hello, Latrice. How you doing?
Okay, thank you. How are you?
Well, I would have to say that in the context of it all, you really put a lot of pressure on your audience to parse the thinking process and pierce and parse your analysis and your cerebral content to entertain such a question to begin with. That being said, and that is a challenge, that the callers have to contextualize their answers so you will entertain these responses to your liking. Putting that aside, I would have to say that the overall totality of what exists is, are we as American people should have confidence in the whole selection process. If I can put my reporter or journalistic hat on, are we as Americans, as United States citizens, if you will, are going to entertain a two-tier or even a three-tier judicial system, some would say an apartheid system, based on these dubious judicial appointments? I want to remind everyone that this judicial system, I believe it was in 1781, where the Judiciary Act was placed and has superseded common law. Were we now in admiralty, maritime, and statutory law? Since then, until our current situation, we have been deemed as either enemies of the state, U.S. citizens, or under the Patriot Act, combatants. And
I have
now,
to interrupt you here for a minute, only because you're taking the historical tact of the actual creation of a judicial system in the United States, which is really not the question. It's a straightforward question. 29 appeals court judges, 52 district court judges, two U.S. Supreme Court judges appointed in the short span of time that Donald McGahn, the White House counsel, was there. He's now left. What should we make of this?
Just in layman's terms, a pedestrian's response. In pedestrian's return, I'm sorry, response to that would be, look, you can't play the race card if the Republican Party, vis-a-vis Donald Trump, is stacking the deck. And that's what he's doing. He's stacking a deck to his own benefit, to his own agenda, where you, once again, there's zero confidence in a judicial system for equal protection. Well, you can just twist it around. You can play a game of Jeopardy, which I think what you're doing. It's like, how much are we losing our due process and the equal protection based on Trump stacking the deck with all these appointments? And is it a breach of his judiciary? Is it a breach of Donald Trump's executive discretion to do so, or is it in combination of a abuse of his discretion, a abuse of his executive conduct in doing so? And these things have no one ever, reporter or anyone in this type of climate has even challenged.
Well, I think this is a very keen insight that you just introduced here. And it is something that is, I think, worthy of a separate and a deep analysis, because you raise several constitutional questions all wrapped up in one. Thank you so much for that. Well, we have one more addition from Georgia that we will entertain on the subject. Donald from Georgia, you're on the air.
Yeah, Hotep,
what,
please.
Thank you, Hotep, to you. What should we be thinking? What questions come to mind immediately just based on the figures? I'm not even getting into the details of things. Just on these facts alone, what questions come to mind?
My question is simple. I just have one. I imagine myself being Mr. McGahn, having his achievements, and I'm sitting back thinking, okay, what can I do next? And then I'm thinking, I'm saying, uh-oh, here come the midterm elections. Now, suppose the Democrats take him over. My boy Trump is going to be in trouble. And what effects would that have on me? Because they will have the House, they have enough people to try to impeach him. Will they pull me in there? And all my accomplishments be overshadowed by that? That's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about, should I jump ship now, or should I stay and fight? And what is happening to all other folks that fought? How can I trust Trump? You know, he don't care about my achievements. That's over with. He'll throw me away quick as he throws anybody else away. Will I go down in this fight to save him from being impeached, or what? Or will we all go down? That's my thinking. That's my question.
Okay. Wow. Look at how many interpretations that we've gotten, and they're all valid, I think. And some are even frightening, even in just the inference of the questions that they're raising. These are frightening questions about what is supposed to be the relationship between the citizen and the apparatus of government, and what happened here? What happened here? Well, a couple of the questions I thought I would hear from you about, just I go down the numbers again, 29 appeals court judges, 52 district court judges, and two U.S. Supreme Court appointments in 2 years. That is remarkable by any measure. It means there was extraordinary preparation. The president may look like, you know, a kind of clown. But these numbers do not suggest that he's a clown. It suggests that there's somebody, if he is not doing the thinking, there are people who are doing not only the thinking, but the preparation to get these positions filled and organizing the political support to get them done. Now, that's on one hand. But I was hoping that people would point out that it raises major questions about the Obama administration and the Obama presidency itself. You know your term is coming to an end. You know you have these vacancies, or these vacancies will soon be available to be filled. You do nothing. Which brings us to the legitimacy of the point that Bruce raised earlier. Is it possible that that was a deal? As I, Barack Obama, end my term with all of these positions in play, and these are not fly-by-night positions. These are serious positions, and they are federal positions, which means that the president would have some kind of sway over the disposition of these particular offices and jobs. So it isn't so much, I'm not so much concerned at this point about the fact that, well, Donald Trump did a great job. He did. Let's not diminish that. I'm concerned about Obama. You have, in effect, let's see, 81 judgeships, federal judgeships, 81 of them, either available or soon to be available. You're president of the United States. How is it possible that you could leave office with 81 judgeships, federal judgeships available, plus two U.S. Supreme Court seats, and you leaving office with those seats available? There's something wrong here. I don't fault, in fact, it is very logical that Donald Trump will pursue these appointments with great speed and with a lot of backroom dealings that would come anyway, because that's how these things are done. I cannot understand how Barack Obama, as president of the United States, with all the power attendant to that position, knowing that these positions of extraordinary influence and power were available, had not been filled, or will soon become available, and left office with all of these positions empty, all of these positions available. How did that happen? How did that happen? Not only Obama, but the great Nancy Pelosi, mother dear. How did these Democratic leaders allow a transition to occur that couldn't be any starker than it is? The so-called liberal Barack Obama, as opposed to the, quote, conservative Donald Trump, and you have a transition, a historic transition, a historic moment, where one president leaving office should never, ever leave office with this kind of opportunity that he literally gave to a president who couldn't be more different from his political beliefs? That is the question. Donald Trump did what any enterprising person would do. The Republicans moved fast to get their people in. Because for one thing, these appointments are long in duration. Federal appointments are like that. Some of them would be on the bench until they die. So that is the question. How did it happen that Barack Obama and his very educated, very accomplished team didn't see this coming and did not prepare for it and did not secure these positions before he left office? It's an indictment, and he can't run away from it. He has to answer this question. No person with a good working brain in politics would leave this situation as it is and leave himself and his entire administration and his historical record open to a situation where his flanks are unprotected, his history is unprotected, and certainly in terms of what he owed the people of the United States, he owed them the vigilance to protect these offices and to see to it, make it a priority, that these positions should not be vacant as he leaves office. So I'm afraid Barack Obama comes out with very many marks against him on this front. And very quietly, this is how power people behave. They have an objective. While they're doing A, their team is doing B. But we end up with the desired result. 29 appeals court judges. And all of these courts, by the way, are the courts in which the wealthy and the politically well-connected, these are the courts that they deal in. These are the courts that concern them. 52 district court judges and 2 U.S. Supreme Court judges. Bingo, in less than 2 years. You could hate it all we want, but these are now facts. Thanks so much for listening and contributing. Man, time goes real fast, but you know what? I am deliriously happy with your response. Thank you so much. Tomorrow is Free Your Mind Friday. Let's do some mind freeing work tomorrow. Bye-bye.